Welcome to It's Not That Deep with me, Lucy Woods, a mindfulness teacher.
And me, Adrienne Kirk, a psychotherapist. Every episode, we discuss navigating the messiness of everyday life.
We know it's a big subject, but we will do our best to discuss it lightly and make some sense of it all. In this episode, we are discussing why do I stay even though I'm unhappy? And this has been a topic that we both found really interesting. And I had a quote this week that I posted in my Facebook group from Thich Nhat Hanh, which says, "People have a hard time letting go of their suffering. Out of a fear of the unknown, they prefer suffering that's familiar." And that's familiar, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Yes. I mean, it's something that shows up a lot in clients. Pretty much all the time, and in myself, and
I can
absolutely relate to that about kind of changing jobs or moving areas or leaving relationships or any of those things, you know, kind of staying longer even though I know I'm unhappy because of the fear of the unknown, the fear of making that jump, of not knowing how possible it is or what it will be like or any of those, you know, any of those things. What if it's worse?
Yeah, you know. And I think I mentioned before about even around my own anxiety, a reluctance to let that familiarity of anxiety go because I believed it was useful to keep me safe, but to literally remember the things, you know, if I'm hyper-vigilant about whether I've left the straighteners on or not, or, you know, to not get so drunk that I wouldn't be able to get home and be safe in that, if I let go of that, then it could be worse.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And with my clients, a lot of those behaviours that are keeping them stuck are things that served them well as children. So they did keep them safe. That hypervigilance.
Yeah.
If you grow up in a household that is quite volatile, right, that hypervigilance to the moods that are in the house, the atmosphere, that turning out to and then trying to keep everything really calm and not show your own emotions and be small and quiet and good, serves you really well as a child, right? It does keep you safe.
Yeah.
And then we develop that as our coping strategy. It becomes a sedimented belief. We don't even think about it anymore. It's just how
we are.
Yeah. And then we get to be an adult and it's not serving us well and we're unhappy, but we don't really know why. We feel constrained and, you know, unseen and sad about that.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to see what those behaviours are that we're holding on to when they have just become part of how we are in the world.
Yeah, and so it's even harder when we can't see it.
Yeah.
But sometimes we're really aware of that thing we are not quite willing to change even though we're unhappy.
Yeah.
And we get really stuck then.
Absolutely.
Because it's just like a paradox, isn't it? I know that I'm unhappy. I know that if I was a bit braver to try that thing or leave this job or whatever, leave this relationship, there's a big possibility I might be happier, but I'm scared that I might not be. I did it myself.
Yeah,
there was a job, I went for it, I got the job, and then my company counter-offered by agreeing for me to go 4 days. Well, I put to them, I'll stay if you give me 4 days, and they said yes. And I told this other company, and they said, well, we'll give you 4 days as well. And I should at that time have gone, but I suppose single mom and what if it didn't work out?
Mm-hmm.
What if I didn't pass my probation and then I didn't have a job and then I couldn't pay the mortgage and? So I stayed and I stayed like another, I don't know, 7 or 8 years of utter misery, you know, in that point. And I can be grateful for this. I found mindfulness at least. But, oh gosh, I wish that I'd had that sort of courageousness, courage to move beyond that.
Yeah, and it is really hard, isn't it? And it's hard if you're stuck somewhere and you can't see what you could change, right? So my one of my examples is also about a job, but I'd got to the stage where when I was walking to work in the morning, I would get to the edge of a main road that I was crossing and then try and, you know, there was a moment where I would think, I'd like to step in front of a car, not to die, but just to be injured enough to make today stop, to make today not happen.
So I don't have to go to work.
Exactly, exactly. Which is awful. But the thing is that I was also, the discomfort was not just in that role, but in that industry. Mm. So the change, I couldn't see what I would go to.
Right.
Actually, what I did was train as a psychotherapist, yeah. which was, what you know, it's a bit like you, there is a silver lining to this story, right?
Yes.
I did find the thing but and I have clients in that, not quite in that state, but in the state of not liking their jobs or not liking their relationships, but not being able to see how it's possible to move.
Yeah.
And of course it always is, if we can just allow to ourselves to zoom, you said this earlier, to zoom out and to look at the bigger picture,
yeah.
Right? Because we get so in with all the adrenaline and cortisol in our bodies, what that does is it gives us tunnel vision.
Yeah.
So we get tunnel vision and we can only see this problem, and then we look for very literal answers. And actually perhaps the answer is something a bit left field
or a bit more creative, yeah.
Right? So being able to zoom out and look at the bigger picture might give us space to do that.
Yeah. I mean, that's why people come and talk to you as well,
yeah.
Because you can be that bigger picture.
Absolutely.
For people as well.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in also the fact that we're talking about literal moves, like
yes.
Into a new job, into a out of an old job, out of a relationship, out of something that, a house or something that's kind of tangible. But often it's back to what you were talking about earlier, which is these aspects of who we are that
yeah.
we're clinging on to.
Yeah.
Some unseen and some that we're acutely aware of, and how then we move from that when we've identified so heavily with that being who we are,
yes.
You know, I'm this kind of person, and in order to change it almost feels kind of, well, how could I change it, because it's who I am.
Yes, I'm the sort of person who, yeah, absolutely. And that, you're right, that's a that feels catastrophic, right? So now I'm going to have to be somebody entirely different, and that's not authentic.
Yeah.
It's not the real me.
Yeah. And what is the real me?
Yeah.
Oh my God, we
yeah.
can get really existential.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. And we've said in podcasts before, you know, our thoughts are not us, right? Because our thoughts change over time. We,
yeah.
we have different opinions about things at different stages of our lives, right? So although we identify with them, you know, trying to sort of separate out, you know, what is a thought, a belief,
mm.
and actually can I examine it, right?
Yeah.
Can I actually dig it up and have a good look at it? Right.
Is it true?
Yeah,
someone
absolutely.
Said to me the other day, could I prove it in a court of law? I thought that's quite funny.
Yeah, absolutely. I always think of these things, these sedimented beliefs, like being in a snow globe, right? So these layers of coloured sand in a snow globe. And actually what we do in therapy and what we do in mindfulness is give that a good old shake, right? Get it all out, have a look. And some of them we're going to keep because they're important to us. And some of them are going to go, hang on a minute. I'm not actually sure that serves me well. Can I look
yeah.
at that differently? Can I be, you know, can I approach those situations differently? Can I think about them, feel about them differently?
Yeah, and I think what's really important here, and a challenge to anyone that hasn't really done the work or this type of work, is to remember, and we might not even believe this actually, but this is my belief, that there is no kind of fixed self.
No.
That if we think about who we were maybe even 5 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly 20, 30 years ago, I'm very different. You know, there's essence of Lucy that's kind of come along. But I'm not the same.
No.
It's ever changing, ever evolving. I mean, I can change moment to moment, you know, if we think about mood and stuff like that. And this idea that there's one fixed
yeah.
thing that can't be changed. We've kind of disproven that with things like neuroplasticity anyway, knowing that we can retrain our brains to have new habits, new skills, new behaviours. So if we can let go of this idea of the fixed sense of self, and the thing that helps me is knowing our cells 100% are different, like every 7 years or something, like every single cell in the body is brand new. That really helps me to think there isn't this kind of permanent Lucy that's faulty or whatever. There's just this ever-evolving being that I am, that there's this ebbing and flowing and learning and changing. And if we can go with that kind of flux, that feels a bit more easy or simpler to get through life, rather than holding on rigidly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, that holding on rigidly is what feels safe, but actually it's the thing that's creating the unhappiness, the confusion, the dissonance, the lack of safety, actually, because if you're unhappy, you know, that's not really a safe place to be. It's familiar, but not necessarily safe.
Oh, yes, some of the familiar places are really unsafe. And, you know, I talked to you earlier about experimenting with, like, just going with the flow a bit more. And it sounds a bit like a hippie thing, you know, but not kind of trying so hard to control everything.
Yeah.
To keep it as is or whatever, knowing that actually in life, the only certainty is that everything changes. And we're really rubbish at it. We've spoken about that in a previous podcast, that we don't like change. But there's a poem, and it says something like, I would like to go as a river flows. I need to remember it. But it's something like, you know, being surprised at its own unfolding or something. Mm-hmm. And that essence of that is just like a couple of lines. That's what I would quite like, to be like the river. Oh, here's a bend. Oh, here's a rock. Oh, you know.
Yeah, to develop that curiosity about what's happening, what's coming, right? And I think you touched on something really important there, which is about control, right? And we've talked about this often, right? And the reason we do is because it's pivotal, I think, is that we very often have very little control about what is going on, and the sorts of situations we're talking about, you know, where we respond in certain ways is about trying to control other people's reactions to us
behaviors,
or behaviors or whatever, and actually that's not about us, that's about them. And what we have control over is how we are in that situation, how we respond to it, how we deal with it, how we think about it, right? That's where our control is. And pulling back to that and then having compassion and going, oh, poor thing, they're very aerated about that.
Bless them. Are you okay?
Yes, absolutely. You know, rather than going, what did I do? I must fix this immediately. I must keep it. Absolutely. Yeah. Feeling that anxiety rising, you know, that feeling of shame that we have, that we've done something and we don't know what it is. And
that's
what we get. It's often a childhood reaction, right? That pops up. Right? But just kind of learning to be curious, oh, where did that feeling come from? And is it true? Is it true? And if I did do something, then obviously deal with that, apologise, whatever. But if somebody's just, you know, they're very angry that you don't want Chinese for dinner, you'd rather have an Indian, then that's kind of about their
mind. You problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's another quote from my son. Yeah. I think you'll find that's a you problem. Okay. I'm going to use this so much now. Now, there's an irony here.
Yes.
Because if we think about my precipice my fork in the road that I was standing at, I had control over that decision.
You did.
I had choice.
Yeah.
And I chose not because of the fear.
Yeah.
So that, you know, so much of our life is out of our control, it's beyond our control, and we can, you know, go with the flow a bit more. But then in those instances where we do need to make a decision, sometimes we slip back into this, oh no, familiar is better even though it's worse.
Yes, oh, absolutely.
That I struggle with.
Yeah. And then we add beating ourselves up to that, right? Because now I've made that decision and I kind of know it's wrong and yet I'm gonna go with it because the fear of doing something different is great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's overwhelming. Yeah. And I'm wondering what's needed at that time, since there needs to be some kind of courage to try something different, to push
yeah. as we've spoken about before, at that window of tolerance, like that we like being comfortable. It feels safe, even as we've explored when it isn't.
Yeah. And there is something I think about. Oh, that thought just left my head. Thank you, menopause.
oh, no, this keeps happening to me today. But that, I was just going to say that there's that bit of the only growth that's going to happen. Is that what it was?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, okay, you're going back. But it is by moving beyond that. Otherwise, everything stays, like I said, everything changes earlier. But, you know, it's that rigid, small window of tolerance rather than growing beyond it.
Absolutely. And the thought that did briefly pass through my head is about the way in which we evaluate those things, right? So we tend to catastrophize about the change you said about that job. What if I don't pass my promotion? What if, you know, and then actually pulling ourselves back from the catastrophizing. Has that ever happened? And what? How likely is that?
Mel Robbins, what if it all works out?
Absolutely, yeah. Because what we tend to do, I think, is catastrophize about the possible change and ignore how horrible the familiar is, right?
That's and how nice it might be if it all worked out.
Absolutely. You know, I'm already living my worst life, you know, at that road every day. You know, clearly there are plenty of cues that this is not the workplace for me, right? So why would I think that something else, that the possible catastrophizing of something else is worse than this?
Yeah. Well, it was the inner critic at play that I wouldn't be good enough. It wasn't the same job. You know, it would require a slightly different set of skills. Ones that I'm sure were perfectly in my capability, but maybe I'd exaggerated in the interview a little bit. Yeah. And, you know, and particularly because the company I was working for didn't develop me very much to where I should have been at that level of training manager. And so there was this, they're going to see that I wasn't a real training manager because I worked for a shonky company. So I'm going to get exposed, you're going to be found out, you're not going to be good enough, and therefore you will fail.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it was my own just letting inner critic go to the, you know, there's the catastrophizing coupled with that self-limiting belief about not being good enough.
Yeah. Absolutely, I know, and stepping away from that is really hard, and that's the work, right?
Like
you say, you know, what if it all went well, you know? What if it all worked out?
Yeah.
You know, because if we're changing jobs or if we're trying to do something different, right, we're not going to be perfect at it immediately, but good enough has to be good enough. And there's a process. It's always a process. So it's going to take effort and practice to change the way we are in a particular situation, you know, not getting massively stressed or stepping away from the inner critic or any of those things, because we're having to grow a new neural pathway that believes that we are actually capable.
I've learned the new skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now I'm doing it. It's going to be uncomfortable.
Yes.
It's going to feel difficult.
Yeah.
And that ability to be with the unpleasantness of change, the unpleasantness of the unfamiliar, is really where the work is, isn't it? And that ability, as you mentioned earlier, that mindfulness enables us to, or whatever, to zoom out and notice, whoa, this is really uncomfortable, but it's okay.
Yes.
This is what happens in change. This is what happens in growth. There is a period of unfamiliarity. I mean, I'm just thinking, like, I don't know, learning to drive a car, right? Those first few lessons of, oh my God, I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know how to do it. I'm in charge of this metal machine that could kill people. This is, you know, maybe not everyone was quite as dramatic as me, but there must be that sense of it's not comfortable, not knowing, not being good at it, not knowing what we're doing. And it does hold some people back, you know, that even I'm thinking of my children, you know, they'd rather not do the thing than have to go in and make small talk and all that uncomfortable, sticky stuff. But until you do that, until you push through that, you won't meet new friends or try new sports or whatever, will you?
No, absolutely. And I think you're right, that zooming out allows us, it can allow us to explore what is that discomfort, right? So rather than just going, oh, I can't do this, this is terrifying, I'm going back to where I was, I say, you know, what is the terrifying, you know? And if it is just the unknown, can I be brave and step out and give it a go and see if it's doable?
Yeah.
And does it, and might it lead to something that will feel more pleasant? So when this is comfortable,
like
to me,
the freedom of driving,
absolutely,
right?
And when it feels comfortable, will that be something I enjoy?
Yeah. And I, you know, that's like the cognitive processing,
yeah,
of it. And I think we can like also recognise with the zooming out that our experience is made up of a bundle of body sensations, a bundle of kind of emotional feelings, and a load of thoughts that pop along. So that it's, if we can notice, oh well, my body's reacting in this way that, you know, it was designed to run from saber-toothed tigers or whatever. Yes, it feels uncomfortable, but it's just a discomfort in my stomach,
yeah,
and yes, the thoughts are there and I am feeling the fear, but that's okay. We can kind of hold that experience, then we don't need to reason with the terrified mind in that moment of fear, and we can sort of say, okay, fear is here, but can we do it anyway, right? Feel,
yeah,
the fear and do it anyway.
Absolutely, yeah.
Can we do that?
And also having acknowledged that that's there, is there anything else here, right? Because often the unpleasant feeling emotion is the one that takes our attention, and there are others. So along with that fear, there's a bit of excitement,
yeah,
and they're really close in body sensation, right?
Yeah.
So okay, now there's a smorgasbord of stuff.
And
so
there's possibility in there.
Exactly. So can I turn towards the other, slightly less sticky feelings, because they're in there too, and honour those, you know. Kind of go with those a bit, because if we allow ourselves to become overcome by the fear, the anxiety, then we're stuck, right?
Move.
Exactly, we can't move, and we can't. Then we get that regret afterwards. Oh, I wish I could have gone. Really, I wish I had.
Yeah.
It would have been,
I've missed out.
You know, somebody you know does, and now they've got a couple of new friends or whatever it was. You know. I wish I had.
Mm.
I'd probably, it'd be like that time where I didn't want to and then had quite a good time when I got there.
Yeah.
You know? So allowing ourselves that, those possibilities, I think, is really important.
And like
terrifying.
You say, when we're in the terrifying,
yeah,
we do get narrow focused,
we
and
do.
We do need to zoom out. It strikes me the two main things really that have come from this is the courage and to do it with bucket loads of kindness and,
yeah,
compassion, so that inner critic doesn't win the day.
Yeah, absolutely. And to step away from the all or nothing, you know, that it's not going to be the end of the world. It might not turn out to be quite what we thought, but and that might also have possibilities.
Yeah.
You know, good enough is good enough.
Yeah, I mean, if we think about the number of times things haven't gone right, but from it something else okay might have come, or we're here now, so it's all turned out as it's turned out.
Yeah.
You know, the worst case scenario often isn't the worst case scenario just in that moment.
No.
Something else might come from it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You've been listening to It's Not That Deep with Lucy Woods and Adrienne Kirk. If you've enjoyed listening, why not subscribe to the podcast so that you never miss an episode?